Welcome to SMQB's episode 201. How you guys doing?
Oh, just well, another Monday. Brewster, nothing really that big.
Yeah, it was an uneventful weekend.
How you think you're doing?
Well, we're gonna get to house this weekend, Mr. Eagle here, in just a minute. We'll start out with our segment called Who Are You Gonna Take to the Bar, which is when each of us picks someone in the world of sports we'd be really interested in having a little chat with. I'm gonna go first, and I'm gonna take House to the bar.
House has
been in, he just got back from New Orleans from the Super Bowl. When did you get there? When did you arrive in New Orleans?
Friday at around 1:30 in the afternoon.
And when did you start drinking?
Friday at 1:31.
Yeah, exactly. And when did you stop?
There was one more bourbon that they offered at the airport on the way back. So about, sometime this afternoon.
So we're going to go to the bar, and I'm going to bring one of those little BAC breathalyzers with me, and I'm going to see what House's current BAC is and whether he can possibly squeeze in one more celebratory drink. How about you, House? Who are you taking?
Well, I have to take the MVP, Jalen Hurts. We're going to say a lot about him with the Super Bowl. But I just want to say, Jalen, you're going to be on Saturday Night Live tomorrow with Saquon. Saturday Night Live. You're going to be on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon tomorrow with Saquon. You're going to be feted around the country, if not around the world. But here at the SMQBs, at least this guy, this Philadelphian who will forever be thankful, wants to just bring you and your whole team, which is another amazing story we can get to, is the only guy in the NFL with an all-female management team, take you and your whole team to the bar and have a drink to say thank you for what you've done for Philadelphia.
Your voice sounds excellent.
Thank you.
Pope, who are you taking to the bar?
Oh, well, since I've been taking Nico Harrison to the train station, I don't have him left anymore. On my way to punching somebody today, I'll be taking Patrick Dumont to the bar. Do you guys know who that is?
Nope.
Yes, he's the the guy who's one of the majority the controllers of the Mavs.
Yes, he's Miriam Adelson's son-in-law who inherited the Sands fortune and the Dallas Mavericks ultimately, and is the quote-unquote governor. Whenever they started calling them governors, I don't know when that was, but he's the governor of the Mavericks. And I want to buy him some arsenic and have him ingest it. Then I'm going to ask him as he's fading away, what the fuck he was thinking when he tried to explain the Luka trade by saying that Luka didn't have what it took on a daily basis, didn't care about winning, wasn't the right culture, and compared him to Shaq.
Oh my God.
So, yes.
Wow.
And I'm hoping.
You mean to tell me that inheriting the Sands doesn't qualify one to be the world's preeminent expert in basketball?
Right. And I'm hoping between now and when I punch his ass later, he'll still be awake. But it's maybe a little not strong enough arsenic. We'll get him later.
All right. Okay. Well, listen, before we move on to talk about the main event, I'd like to formally introduce our listeners to our newest sponsor, Digital Law Marketing. Our firm uses Digital Law Marketing. This is Brewster, and I can tell you that, you know, we all work hard as lawyers to deliver great results for our clients. And for many, many years, I felt that our marketing companies were not working hard to deliver great results for us. And that all changed a few years ago when we hired Digital Law Marketing, which works exclusively with one firm per practice area, per geographic region. And I can just attest to this one fact, that the results have been amazing. It's really taken off. And if you want your marketing firm and your website and your blog site and all of your social media work to work as hard for you as you work for your clients, I invite you to visit digitallawmarketing.com for exclusivity, expertise, and results. I can't recommend them highly enough. Thank you.
And truly nice people.
Really, they are. You can't beat better people than Mike and Stephanie. So let's move on to the Super Bowl house. You know, I've been to a Super Bowl, but I was a neutral. My team wasn't playing. What was it like being in New Orleans at the Super Bowl rooting for your Eagles?
Oh, he's already tearing up.
When I was a freshman in college at Tulane University, I got a last-minute invite to join a friend to go to Super Bowl 24, where I watched the 49ers take on the Broncos, and they whipped them 55-10. And the game was over at halftime, and it was a laugher. And I got to tell you, 35 years later in the Superdome, although I'm a very nervous, anxious guy, and I was not really exhaling well until very, very late in the fourth quarter, I think for most people who are texting me, it was the same.
Yeah.
We flew back today from New Orleans, and the good people at Southwest Airlines had on demand already the Super Bowl, so we watched it on the way back. And I could tell you from watching on TV that you could see just how dominant the performance was.
Right.
And from the vantage point of in the stands, I paid special attention to the defense and to a player. I have never seen the Eagles in my life, and I've been going to games since I was a kid. I've never seen the Eagles defense so locked in, so dialed in, each person playing their role so perfectly, just totally focused on their assignment. And there are very, very few times, I was going over this with my buddy, who I've been going to Eagles games with for 30 years. I don't remember a major sporting event that a Philadelphia sports team has been in where we won, and you could say the reason we won is because we outcoached the other team. We've had championships. We've had the Dr. J's, and we've had the Chase Utley's and the Jimmy Rollins and the Ryan Howard's and Nick Foles. We did not outcoach Bill Belichick. We just outplayed the Patriots. Last night, we flat out outcoached Andy Reid.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up. You know, whatever the Chiefs were trying to do on offense in the first and second quarters just wasn't working, period. And I attribute that 95% to the Eagles' defensive front line. I mean, they just were monstrous. But it took Andy Reid until the half to make any adjustment. And then they came out in the third quarter and had, you know, a plan to get the rush off of Mahomes. It didn't work all that well, but at least it was a change of plan. How do you wait a whole half to change the play calling there? I didn't get that at all.
Well, after you dug yourself a 24-point hole.
Yeah. Well,
you know, Eagles fans were frustrated with Andy Reid for a long time, and he's going to be an all-time great in the NFL. But there were two knocks on Andy Reid when he was in Philadelphia, and one was his clock management, and two was his failure to make in-game adjustments. Mm-hmm. And he could not make those adjustments last night. And I have got to give so many flowers. I took him to the bar last week, but I got to give so many flowers to Kellen Moore. I suspect we'll hear, if we haven't already heard, the next 24, 48 hours, he'll be the Saints head coach. And he remained so committed to an excellent, excellent offensive game plan where they knew the entire Chiefs scheme was going to be shut down Saquon, and they had a complete plan B for it, a complete plan B.
Right.
Well, I don't know if it was even plan B. They interviewed Sirianni and AJ on ESPN game after the game, and those guys said, you know, like Chris asked him, when was it that you knew that that they were going to stack the line with Saquon? And he goes, last week. We game planned this last week. We expected this. So we were ready.
The whole sports world expected it.
And well, but
kept saying just run
it's
Saquon.
It's one thing
just
to say we
Saquon.
Expect it, and it's another thing to be able to game plan it like Kellen and the crew were able to do.
But
and,
you know,
and
you're
execute too with.
Yeah.
With Jalen. I mean, he was, Toby, when did you know that Jalen was on that night, last night?
Actually, it's so funny you say that because when I really knew he was on was on the first offensive pass interference call when he dropped what was an absolute dime to A.J. Brown. I said, okay, Jalen is locked in. That is such a perfect pass.
One of three like that, too.
Yep.
I mean, wow. I give so much props to him for his just real preparation for that game and his instincts. Yeah, he made the one mistake. I know he would like to have that back. I know that that was not a great throw, and it's got to be where nobody else can catch it on the one INT. That was his only mistake of the game. In fact, he finished the game, as y'all know, and I'm probably a lot of folks, I don't know if it was on TV because a lot of these stats are coming out, but he now has the highest efficiency rating of any quarterback in Super Bowl history, period.
Ooh, ahead of Phil Simms, who I thought almost threw a perfect game.
Yeah, no, per True Media, Jalen Hurts finishes with the highest efficiency drop back for quarterback in the Super Bowl since 2000. So Phil Simms would have been before that. I guess in this century, it's the highest. But he just played incredible. Incredible, incredible, incredible. You know, I think in the first half, before that Devontae touchdown, I mean, there was a thought, maybe Cooper DeJean gets a surprise MVP. Maybe Josh Sweat gets an MVP. But then once the Devontae throw, and then once Jalen started evading
the pocket
and that sixth sense and his runs, then you knew he was the MVP. You just knew it.
You know, nothing against Jalen, because I think he actually established himself as maybe the number one quarterback in the league with this game, but definitely an elite top three. So nothing against him, but I really think you could have given a co-MVP to the whole defense.
Sure.
The defense was suffocating. It had Patrick Mahomes off of his game immediately. You're right. Watching that game on TV on the airplane back, you probably, now that, you know, you weren't all nervous because you're a fan in the stands, you could probably tell the game was over relatively soon. If you're not an Eagles fan, they're just, you know, loving the fact that you're way up. Yeah, and you're loving the fact that you're way up and you don't have to hyperventilate the whole game. So it was a good game for you to watch live. But if you're just a fan of neither team and you're rooting for a good game, it was a dud because the Eagles crushed them. Soul crushing performance, actually. And I think the defense deserves all the credit in the world. This defense reminded me of the old school Super Bowl defenses, where like the Steel Curtain,
the Bears,
the Giants, early Super Bowls, the Vikings, Purple People Leaders, they never won, but it got them there, where they didn't have to blitz. They relied on four guys, down linemen, to rush and put all kinds of pressure on the quarterback with just four guys. It's hard to win. It's hard for any quarterback running for his life to complete passes. And Patrick Mahomes looked like he was a rookie in that game.
So, Toby, how many times did the Eagles blitz?
Zero.
Zero. And how many pressures did they have?
I think, was it 16?
16. And how many sacks?
I think it was six.
Six sacks, which was the career high for Mahomes, without one blitz. It just shows you how freaking dominant your D-line is. And it's scary. We'll talk about it later. But it's scary how young they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there's something fun when you get these coaches who are essentially gym rats, who've been around the game forever, and they just want that opportunity for that one shining moment. And, you know, Jeff Stoutland, the offensive line coach, who Rooster told our audience about last week, turning Mekhi Becton, who had never played guard, into a dominant right guard in the NFL. He turned a seventh-round Australian rules football rugby player, Jordan Mailata, to one of the most dominant left tackles in all the NFL. Jeff Stoutland and Vic Fangio, this kind of curmudgeon-y, you know, what's his face, Burgess Meredith, Rocky type of kind of guy. Fangio's like that kind of guy. and he just put together the most brilliant defensive game plan. And we kept talking about, like, well, who's the standout on defense? And while there were a couple amazing plays by Josh Sweat and Milton Williams, the truth is everybody in that whole defense, every single player on that defense did what they needed to do. Even in at one situation where I think Cooper DeJean went out for a play or two, Avante Maddox came in and knocked down that fourth down play. Everybody, when they came in, made
it. Had to jump on it.
It was amazing.
Ron, how about that interception? That was insane.
It was an amazing performance by the defense, and the opposite can be said about the Chiefs' offensive line. If they don't fix that offensive line, they're going to take a nosedive next year.
They got manhandled.
Yeah.
I think it's funny you should say that, Rooster. I said in the airport today, you know, the Chiefs won an overtime against the 49ers last year to win that Super Bowl. We've talked about a lot on the pod. They struggled to win games this year, all of them, almost all of them, by one score or less. They eked out that win against the Bills. My prediction, and look, we're all just, at least in Philadelphia, we're just basking in the glow of a win. I think the torch is going to be passed next year. I think the Bills or the Ravens are going to step through. And I guess maybe that's a quick knee-jerk reaction from the Chiefs being dominated, but I really do. I think if they don't fix that offensive line, look, they're going to get Rashee Rice back. They're going to get Xavier Worthy even better next year. Hollywood Brown healthy. We'll see if Travis Kelce comes back. Pacheco maybe for a healthy season. But if they don't fix that offensive line, and they had definitely lots of problems in their secondary last night, other teams in the AFC will be coming for them.
Yeah, if you're right. If they don't fix that line, all those close games that they won, the majority of them will be lost next year, and they'll have a mediocre record. But never count out the Chiefs' front office.
No,
they're pretty good at plugging holes.
Ultimately, that I always felt like this game would either be a blowout for the Eagles, or the Chiefs would win, you know, on the narrow margin. And that's why I predicted the Chiefs, because until somebody actually knocked them off from winning on the narrow margin, you know, you had to prove it. But you guys did what a lot of people thought would might happen. Y'all just were a superior team on offense and defense, and it showed. It showed early. It showed when it mattered. House, watching that game, did it not remind you a little bit of the 1990 throwback when the NFC East just used to pound the shit out of the AFC teams in Super Bowls?
Yeah. I mean, it was whatever we used to call that, right? You know, 2 yards in a cloud of dust. We were talking about this, that the 57 or whatever yards that Jalen had running the ball were some of the hardest earned 57 yards.
He had 72. Saquon had 57.
I meant to say Saquon. Saquon's rushing yards were a lot of two yards in a cloud of dust. They just kept pounding them and pounding them and pounding them to set up the pass. But this Eagles team that won, in terms of its dominance, the following teams won a Super Bowl and a conference championship by 18 or more points in NFL postseason in history. The 84 49ers, the 85 Bears, the 89 49ers. No, the 89 49ers, the 2024 Eagles. The Eagles scored the most points in postseason history, with 145 points, most points scored in a single postseason. Now, granted, they had a wild card, a divisional game, and a conference championship and a Super Bowl, but you just can't stop running out of superlatives. There are two quarterbacks in NFL history who have completed 70% of their passes and scored 3 touchdowns in multiple Super Bowl games. One of them is named Tom Brady. The other is Jalen Hurts. So, I mean, you can keep going on and on with so many stats. The comparisons, remarkably, between where Jalen is now and where Mahomes was at this stage in the career, they're nearly identical. So, you know, I'm not saying that Jalen Hurts is going to become Patrick Holmes or Tom Brady, but the Eagles are positioned to really become something special if they stay healthy. And I think they've got the best executive in the NFL who knows how to manage this. They're big free agents. They're going to have to worry about. They're going to have to sign Zach Bond, and they're going to have to sign Mekhi Becton. I think those would both be major losses. I don't think they'll be able to keep both Josh Sweat and Milt Williams. So their defensive line may take some hits. But if somehow Howie can run that inside straight and keeps those four players on that team, I don't think it's going to happen. But if he does, I don't see any drop-off from this team at all.
It's a relatively stable roster, young. So you're right. If they stay healthy, they're going to be a force for a few more years.
Look, they're to me as scary a team as I've seen for a long run of a dynasty as since the 90 Cowboys. They are just stacked. And, you know, with free agency, the way that they reloaded.
The Cowboys were once good?
That's what I'm saying. That's a compliment to the Eagles that in the last 30 years there hadn't been a team in the NFC that looks like they're poised, you know, without getting decimated by injuries or free agency. Y'all are poised with your roster to make a run. And I would say, you know, I don't know, a prop bet, but I would say the odds are maybe around 50% that you guys repeat next year, and you might be going for a three-peat in 3 years or 2 years.
It's so hard because we've said on this pod so many times about injuries and luck and a lot of other things. I really give this team so much credit. They were really, really fueled. Nick Sirianni said they were really fueled by that drop off last year. They learned a lot of lessons after starting out 10-1 and fading. And look, say whatever you want about bulletin board stuff, but the defense was really, really pissed off with this nonstop three-peat stuff.
Yep.
It really fueled that defense. They just were insulted. I, you know, look, none of us are professional athletes, but I have to think that at some point it can make your motor run and make you more dialed in and make you more behave during, you know, Super Bowl week and all the other things that you need to be prepared.
The Chiefs were in active negotiations for the rights to the words three-peat.
They secured
with Pat Riley during the lead up to the Super Bowl, basically counting the chickens before they were hatched.
They might as well have announced the parade route before the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's not smart. All right.
So House, I got a question for you.
Yes.
How many of your current players were on the roster for the last Super Bowl win?
We've got our long snapper, Rick Lovato. We've got our kicker, Jake Elliott. We've got Lane Johnson, our right tackle, and I think that's it.
Nope, Brandon Graham.
Brandon Graham, of course, BG. Where's right? BG? Yeah, just because he retired. Yeah, BG.
Here's my point. You guys were able to rebuild your entire roster from 2017 and get not only, you know, make a run for the Super Bowl runner-up, almost win 2 years ago, but win a Super Bowl. It shows you the genius of Howie Roseman, that he's able to do that. I mean, rebuild a roster. I mean, it's not like you have continuity. You rebuilt the roster and you made it even stronger. That's just fucking amazing.
House, what was your most fun fan experience other than the game?
Well, as longtime listeners know, I've got two boys that are down at Tulane University, one in law school and one who's a senior there. And my youngest son is 16, and my wife and my three boys were all there in our city that we love. It's our second city. And my favorite experience was just really watching the boys celebrate, us celebrating together as a family. That was just absolutely, absolutely incredible. But besides that, somehow you just stars and celebrities just swarm that place and they just pop up everywhere. So I'm walking down the concourse about to be seated for the game. And I run into none other than Scott Hansen from NFL Red Zone. He's the nicest guy. And I asked Scott Hansen if he would just quickly record something for me for video. And he did a little 8-second thing that if the Eagles score 8 touchdowns in this game, they will be in the Octo Box. And it's just great. Just all that kind of fun stuff. And I mean, it's been said so many times in the social media about how New Orleans is such the perfect city. If I could just give so many props to whoever, City of New Orleans, Orleans Parish, the governor, NFL, everybody who put together the production that this Super Bowl was, once you got into the facility of the Superdome, you had hours worth of entertainment. You could get there as early as you wanted. Many people got there 1:30, 2 o'clock, and you could easily fill up hours and hours of entertainment of what they had going. It was a great, great spectacle. What a memory.
I want to give a shout out to cousin Justin. I hope you listen to House's, even though we tried to warn you off of it, I hope you listen to his advice about the bet before the game, because I put some money down on it. Devontae Smith, the over on getting more than 50.5 yards. I mean, in one pass, took care of that pretty much for us. That was anybody else have some hits on bets in this game?
I wish I wrote down what I did get the prop bet on the first song wrong. He did play, Kendrick Lamar did play Humble, but he did not, it was not the first song. So sorry if I misled you on that, but I got y'all paid on Devontae.
I made some money on the prop bet that the Eagles would win the first half and the game.
That's a good one.
The ones I didn't do well on were touchdowns for Saquon and Kelsey.
Yeah, I had a prop bet with AJ touchdown check, Devontae touchdown check, but Juju not so much.
Oh, okay. Oh, right. You had a parlay. That's right.
Yeah, parlay.
Hope, what was your favorite Super Bowl ad?
Oh man, I love the ads. We were talking about that at lunch today with my staff. I think even though it is our theme song for one of our segments, I really loved the kid who put the boxing outfit on and rang the bell for No Cancer, and then walked down the street and was getting high fives, and then showed you when he went home, saw his parents, and you know, when he was just back to being a regular kid. I mean, that I told Cheryl, I said, you know, they know how to go for the heartstring on that. And that, I thought that was really good. I also really thought the seal one was funny. Having seal as a seal.
I didn't see that one.
Of course, how could you not love the, when Harry met, Sally Redo with, Hellman's mayonnaise and the lovely Sydney Sweeney, participating.
I think that one won it hands down, the Hellman's ad. Especially if you're old enough to remember the movie.
He goes, oh, here she goes again.
They show an ad on TV. They showed very few ads in the stadium, but did they show an ad on TV about women's flag football?
Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah.
That was a great ad in the stadium. And then she was in the stadium. That was a great ad.
Yep.
That was where we got introduced to my new favorite character, the Brad.
The Brad, yeah.
Yes. Mullet boy Brad.
I thought the Jeep ad with Harrison Ford was very well done. It was. Too. It was produced.
It was a lot more than just a car ad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah. And then how about Johnny Cash singing Depeche Mode?
Yeah, I heard. How was that?
It was interesting. You know,
this was personal Jesus for the
He Gets Us campaign. No matter what you think about that campaign, it's very well done.
Or Jesus.
But Johnny Cash did that song well. I mean, it was very interesting to hear him sing Depeche Mode.
And I really enjoyed the Matt Damon and David Beckham commercial.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
Yes. That was a good one too.
Yeah.
The other David.
So before we leave, I know House, you're going to be heartbroken if we don't circle back and give some love to Jalen Hurts. And the very last ad of the show was Love Hurts.
Yeah.
And they nailed it. I mean, I think the message was everything you've been shouting from the rooftops for this entire season. He's been dissed all year. He stepped up. And frankly, tell me if anyone disagrees with me. If I'm picking a team for next year, I'm picking him over Josh Allen or Lamar because he wins.
It's name of the game.
Wins in the playoffs.
He's got all the tools. I mean, he's a dual weapon.
So I don't know what you guys think, but my son Josh said, last night. I think Jalen and kind of what we're seeing with Jaden, and we've seen it, Lamar. I think that if you do not have, and Josh Allen, if you do not have the element that you're able to run and evade the pocket and be, like Pope said, like a dual weapon throwing and running, you are going to be really outmoded in the NFL. There are not going to be Peyton Mannings and Tom Brady's. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
What about Joe Burrow?
I mean, sometimes he uses his legs a little bit, but yeah, I mean,
that scares me with regard to drafting Shedeur Sanders.
I think you got to be able to, I think, you know, Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes and Jaden Daniels and Jalen Hurts, those are your quarterbacks that made it to the end of the NFL this year.
Yep. All right. Fans, we're also happy to announce that our other sponsor for this season is our own Milks company, Injury Board. So this podcast and all of the rest of them this year are brought to you by Injury Board and Digital Law Marketing. If you don't know, Injury Board is the premier networking group for top-tier plaintiffs' law firms in this country, Canada, and Europe. And it really is, we've all met some of our most cherished friends through Injury Board and respected colleagues. If you're interested in getting to know more about this organization, visit them at injuryboard.org. Thanks, Milk. All right. Who has a punchable face? Anyone? Don't call it a comeback. I bet it's going to be hard for you to come up with one, House, after that experience. You didn't get punched at a bar, did you?
No, but I gotta say something about the Chiefs fans. They came in very, very, very smarmy and very cocky. And after the very first Chiefs possession, there was a Chiefs fan behind me that was finger wagging and getting in my face and counting off championships and talking smack in my ear. And then he started to curse. And I told him, back off, knock it off. I got kids here. Like, I'll get security. He was getting in my face again. Then I had to pull me back. And, you know, ultimately, I give that guy credit. Like, once it settled down a little bit, he apologized and said it was, like, totally, totally uncalled for. There was almost a punchable face last night in that Super Bowl. Everybody should just go and enjoy the game. You know, root for your team. Don't root against the other. Just have a good time. But, yeah, no punchable faces. It was an amazing experience. So it's hard to come up with one.
Hope, do you have one?
I got that guy right there. That's the most punchable looking face that we've
ever had.
He looks
like he's already been punched.
Yes. Wow. It looks like he should be punched over and over again. In fact, I was having drinks with a buddy who doesn't even listen to the pod, and we were talking about Patrick Dumont.
Oh, Patrick Dumont. Okay.
Yes. The governor. And he said, you know, that guy's got the most punchable face I've ever seen. I said, yeah. Ironically enough, yes, we are going to punch his ass. And I'm going to continue to do it. Tonight's a sad night for us. Luka is making his debut with the Lakers.
He's playing tonight.
I found out a couple things.
And how's the AD experience going, Pope?
Yeah, I found out a couple things that make me want to punch him even more. One is that evidently Cuban was told about the trade, but it was after there was a deal in place and he couldn't do anything about it. And he was obviously upset and told Nico that was stupid and he needed to stop the trade and they didn't do it. And then evidently before the deal was finalized, AD got this abductor strain abdominal injury, and the Lakers had intended to shut him down through at least the All-Star break.
Wow.
He's out 5 to 6 weeks now.
But the Mavericks, in their blind, it's just blind hatred of Luka at that point. It just had to be. The Mavericks decided they would they passed him on the physical, and they felt like they needed to get him out to prove to the fans that they had, you know, the ingredients to potentially win this year. So they rushed him back too soon. He had a great first half. I mean, he had one of the best first halves of the entire year for a player, and showed the possibility of what could happen. But then at the beginning of third quarter, he went down with a non-contact injury to his abdomen. And like you said, Rooster, I mean, not only are they talking about 5 to 6 weeks, there is some discussion today he may need season-ending surgery.
Oh, my God.
So the Mavericks, I mean, we talk about the fans. I mean, oh, my God. They're like, the Mavericks knew that he had this injury and that the Lakers were planning on shutting him down through at least the All-Star break, and yet they, A, passed him on the physical, and, B, allowed him to come out too soon. I'm just going to keep punching. I may never end punching.
Wow. That's amazing. Anybody have a lasso?
Barbecue sauce. Ah!
House?
I do. Part of my experience this weekend was going to the NFL Experience. And if you ever get a chance to go to a Super Bowl or an NFL draft, the NFL does an amazing, amazing job setting up a true, true fan experience where you can just get firsthand of everything, you know, the rings and the tickets and throwing a pass and kicking a ball. I was at the NFL Experience and I saw what appeared to me to be a family walking together, and they were all wearing the same jersey number. That was 93 on the Eagles, which is Milton Williams, their defensive tackle. And I thought, well, what are the chances that four or five people are going to be walking around wearing the same number and not be related? So I walked up and I introduced myself and I said, are you by chance Milton Williams' father? He said, well, yes, I am. And we got to talking for a little bit. He was the nicest guy. And then I went and I read a little bit about the story that's been coming out in the news. And I don't know if you guys have heard the story.
Yeah, it's nice.
Milton Williams Sr. Had a pretty good college career. He grew up in a poor town in Florida and was hoping to get a peek with the Saints and the Cowboys and just never got in. He grew up without a dad. He had a single mom, and he decided that once he had kids, he was going to be the dad he never had. And he has attended all of Milton Williams Jr.'s games, his other kids' stuff. And he's a truck driver. He's a truck driver that works as hard as he can for his kids. And really just gave Junior all the tools that he possibly could have. And when Junior got interviewed by John Gruden to maybe be drafted by the Las Vegas Raiders, he was asked who was his role model for the NFL. And, you know, Senior thought it was maybe going to be Aaron Donald or something else. And he said, my dad. And, you know, these are just incredible, incredible stories. I was fortunate again when I got to the airport to see him again today at the airport on my flight. And to Milton Williams Jr., you're a free agent. I hope you come back. You had an incredible game last night, incredible strip sack. Your motor's incredible, but it's clear where you got your talent from. And the lasso really goes to your dad and all the dads that lived their dream last night for raising their kids and seeing that dream come true. Here's to Milton Williams Sr. on a great lasso for raising a great kid and doing your hardest and your best to make a dream come true for yourself and your family.
For our new listeners, the lasso segment of the program is reserved for some heartwarming stories that are meant to highlight the good in people in the sports world. I've got one, and I really wish our Gator boy Milk was here to hear this one. Saturday night, my daughter and several of her buddies on her Special Olympics basketball team went to a prom called Night to Shine. Night to Shine is a prom that takes place at the same time on the same night in hundreds of cities across the United States and in some other countries. And It is sponsored by the Tim Tebow Foundation. Tim Tebow and his wife, who, you know, Tim Tebow did not make a ton of money in football. He just wasn't in very long and didn't sign a big contract. They give a lot of money to this foundation that is designed to provide for special needs kids this glamorous night out where everyone's dressed up in gowns and tuxedos, and there's a red carpet when you arrive. They've got like limousine service that will take everyone out for a spin for 20 minutes. They've got everyone is the king and queen. So you come up and you're the king and queen, and they play you a video from Tebow and his wife with a message to the king and queen. They sponsor the food. I mean, it's just, I'm sure there's a lot of local volunteers and everything else, but it is a beautiful event. And for the special needs community, it really means a lot because there's not a lot of social opportunities like that for them. So my hat's off to Mr. and Mrs. Tebow for the great work they're doing through this foundation.
And he does a lot of other great work too. Yep. He's a good guy. So I've got a lasso for, if, I don't know if you guys saw the Sterling and Shannon Sharp, video where Sterling finally made the Hall of Fame. He was a lone finalist for the seniors coach and contributor classification for the Hall. Sterling had his career really cut short in 1994. He only played six seasons in the NFL, but I mean, obviously he made a huge impact, but he didn't have the numbers to get in that the other wide receivers he was competing against did. But his brother Shannon, obviously one of the great tight ends, got in 2011. And Sterling, you know, he wanted his brother to get in. And so finally Sterling was, got the votes, but they didn't tell him because Shannon wanted to surprise him. So, Shannon surprised his brother, with a Hall of Fame jacket and, you know, it was very moving. Because, you know, Sterling, since 1994, you know, we're talking about 31 years that he had been waiting for an opportunity to get into the Hall. And it was a very moving moment. And, you know, Shannon was very emotional on the NFL network talking about that's like one of the coolest things in his life was telling his brother, you know, that he had finally made the Hall. My other lasso, which kind of plays on another lasso we've already done, regards Jack and Tiger Besh. If y'all will remember, Tiger, who played football at Princeton from Louisiana, was killed in New Year's Day or the night after New Year's Eve, terrorist attack in New Orleans when the guy ran over a bunch of people, and Tiger was one of those that was killed. His brother, Jack, who played football at TCU, actually started at LSU. I didn't realize that. But, you know, Tom Rinaldi does the story, and every time Tom Rinaldi's going to do a story, I tell Cheryl to, you know, get the tissue because it's just inevitably you're going to tear up because it's so emotional. But it had his parents talking about how special their relationship, their son's relationship was. And it had Jack talking about how, you know, the lasso we gave was the Senior Bowl when he was the MVP and caught the winning touchdown pass. But he, along with the other family members from the people who died or were seriously injured in that terrorist attack, were allowed to come or came to the Super Bowl or invited. But Jack came down on the field and was present for the coin toss, and that was a special moment for that family, I'm sure. So
nice.
They're still struggling, but that was a good moment.
I remember Sterling Sharp's career very well. Yeah. You know, his injury was terrible. He basically broke his neck and had to have the thing fused all up and down his whole neck with plates and screws and everything else. Before that happened, he was better than his brother. He was amazingly good. He had Brett Favre for part of his career. I mean, the guy was unstoppable. And it was a shame that his career got cut short like that. I'm glad to see he got in.
Yeah, really happy to see him get in the Hall. He had Hall of Fame talent. He just got his career cut short.
Yep. Yep. All right. Anybody have any buzzer beaters?
I've got an interesting one. We'll be talking more about college basketball, I assume, in the next month or so. But for the first time ever, Alabama and Auburn are ranked 1 and 2, depending on the poll you look at. Auburn's 1 or Alabama is 1, and it's vice versa, 2. Game day is going to Tuscaloosa on Saturday for the, you know, they're calling it the Basketball Iron Bowl. Saturday night, the number 1 and number 2 teams playing. It's a sign of the times. You look at the SEC, they've got, I don't know, 7 of the top 10 teams. It's just an amazing year for the SEC. So something to watch as we get closer to the tournament time.
How about St. Joe's house?
Yeah, crazy.
Didn't take long.
No. But, you know, I just real quick on the buzzer because Pope reminded me on something. How about this for trivia? Because I was going to mention this. When Devontae Smith scored his touchdown last night, it was the first time, if you can believe this, it was the first time that an Alabama Crimson Tide football player had scored a touchdown in the Super Bowl. When you consider all the dominance that program has had and all their championships, the fact that no one had ever scored a touchdown, and you couldn't count Jalen because, you know, he finished up at Oklahoma and stuff.
Technically.
Yeah.
Where did Mark Ingram go to college? Running back for the Saints.
Heisman Trophy from Alabama.
Yeah, he scored in the Super Bowl, didn't he?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. That was a crazy anomaly stat. To consider that Alabama had never had a touchdown in the NFL Super Bowl until Devontae Smith's touchdown the second last night.
Well, I mean, speaking of Devontae Smith, he joins a really elite club. I can't remember the other. It's only like 3 or 4 other players who have a national title, a Heisman Trophy, and a Super Bowl title.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Great. Wow.
Well, Giants could have had him.
Giants could add a lot of players.
Unbelievable.
That's good to Cowboys.
Yep. Well, anything else tell us?
No, we got to let Toby go and bask in the glory.
Yeah, welcome back, House. I'm glad you made it back alive.
It's a much different pod recording after this one than in Arizona 2 years ago.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
All right, fellas. All right. See you next week.
Good show. Thanks.
All right.
See you, everybody. Good. Come on back.
The SMQBs are Brian Bandwagon Pope, who hails from Dallas, Texas, and has never met a first-place team that he didn't have a personal connection to. Michael Rooster Phelan, hailing from Richmond, and who roots for teams from New York, or is it Boston? I can't remember which it was. One or the other. Also, Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa Bay. And he is still massively in love with Tom Brady and will never get over his man crush on the GOAT. Toby House Milrod, a long-suffering sports fan hailing from Philadelphia, whose Eagles team, they're still looking for another quarterback. And I am Chris Bison Nace, hailing from Washington, District of Champions. Thanks for listening.